Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Fear Response Podcast. We are so happy to have you.
Yes, welcome back, everybody, for this very special finale episode of our first review of a limited series.
Yeah, kind of like bittersweet. I'm sorry to stop talking about it.
It's like a bittersweet symphony, Jenna.
It is. Then you're going to play a little clip of that? Just enough so we don't get sued.
Are you kidding? Of course.
So yeah, we are so happy to talk about it again. And this is our last episode. Like we said, kind of feels like a continuation of the last episode.
I agree. There's some very eerie sense that it is a continuation of the story almost.
But what I mean is that the flow is very direct from one to the other. You could watch them back to back and it would feel like a movie.
By the way, because I'm not sure if we said it yet, we're here to talk about episode 7, the finale of Midnight Mass.
Midnight Mass, we didn't even say it.
Comes to us from Mike Flanagan.
Yep.
And we've been talking about this show for months. We absolutely love it.
Yes.
And we're excited to talk about the finale. Although, watching it back, I think that my favorite episodes might be kind of in the middle.
I think my favorite episodes might be in the middle, too. Honestly, I think my favorite stuff is Riley Father Paul stuff.
Yeah, that's some of the most intense moments, although they're not the horror elements like we're about to get. Mm-hmm. But.
And I guess the mystery unfolding, too, is kind of fun.
I also really like everyone getting younger and listening to Neil Diamond.
Yeah. Okay, so shall I start us off with the narrative flow of this episode?
Sure.
And this is called Revelations. This episode.
Okay, so the title being Revelations.
Yep, first thing on my list here, Mildred wakes up.
Yes, she's been fully inyounged.
Yep.
Even more so than before she was attacked by the vampire, which is the last time we see her in the last episode, right?
She looks no worse for wear for having been
ravaged by
a monster.
Vampire with wings.
And so she gets up and goes back into the church and talks to Father Paul, and he says, "Did I hurt you?" And she says, "Yes."
I think he was talking specifically about the vampire.
I mean, I guess it's a bit of both because he brought it on.
Well, I mean, certainly.
His fault.
This is a bit of my gripe with this whole episode too. But yeah, she says yes. And it's like, yeah, he did.
Yeah, he killed me.
He killed me. At my throat for an extended period of time after swooping me out of this church. Of course it hurt.
I mean, yeah, he killed me. I was killed.
You didn't get hurt, did you?
Yeah. You're okay, right, babe?
Yeah, that's just terrible. I thought the lighting was really nice. Obviously, all candles in the cathedral. It was a really nice-looking shot, but even her just strolling up and sitting down beside Father Paul kind of rubbed me the wrong way a little bit.
Just the fact that they were able to get past what has transpired?
That's their arc for this whole episode, is that she's just kind of, you know, almost feeling bad for him, but I don't know.
Yeah, you know what? I guess I suspended my belief for that a little bit.
Yeah.
Because I guess that I just read it that they both knew that this is the end of everything. So they're letting the small stuff go, even though the small stuff is big stuff. But literally, you know, your last day on Earth.
I think that you're right. And that's exactly what it is. It was just kind of, for me, I was a little frustrated by the whole thing of just Father Paul being like, ooh. Oh,
yeah, and
man.
And kind of like moping and being like a bit of a victim in this episode because he 100% is.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's last episode. So he was like completely, you know, good and not a scary guy in this episode, but in the last episode.
Only if he completely resets as a character at the beginning of every
episode,
right?
That's what I mean. That's what I mean. But it's like if you were to watch this as a movie, then he spent half of it being a complete scary tyrant.
Yeah, totally. Even the last episode, he was still doing some of his blustery sermons and
that's where he killed everyone. And then we see Annie and Ed separately, but they're witnessing the vampires chasing down and killing people.
Yeah, so they're like going into their homes, breaking in and killing people.
Which is a departure from vampire lore. Because they need to be invited in.
Yes, right. And so this one did keep some very cool vampire lore, like with the dirt and the trunk and some of that stuff. It didn't keep things like, I'm sure that they would have a reflection. I'm sure that, they don't need to be invited places.
And like silver and holy water. Well, obviously, holy water's okay.
Less of the like fancy British vampire stuff.
And then we see our our heroes who have run away and they've gone to Aaron's house and now they're starting to figure some stuff out.
That's the note. That's what I call them in my notes too. The heroes. The hero is what I'm referring to, like,
too.
The group.
Me too.
Because yeah, they've set themselves apart from everybody else on the island. They're the only ones with another agenda, pretty much too.
Mm-hmm. I like that it's not just like one or two. I like that it's a little group.
Me too. And they're all, we've spent some time with each character, although some less than others, not Warren very much, mm-hmm. but.
So they realize that in their discussion that the boats are just broken and not sunk so that they can get off the island.
Yeah. So I can't remember who realizes it, if it was Sarah or Aaron.
I think it's Aaron.
They basically realize, well, no, they want to keep the boats for later so that they can leave the island to infect other people, which is what she poses to Sarah. She said, you said this was an infection.
Yeah. So they really flit between, is it a toxin or is it a virus, a contagion? They really flip between those two things.
Right.
And then Aaron starts handing out guns and knives to the heroes here.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like never have I seen guns and knives being handed out in a situation like this where they're so useless as this, you know? They're so outnumbered.
And Annie has a big problem with it. She says, well, what's this going to do in the first place? So A, she sees it as futile. Mm-hmm. She says they just get up. But then she also says, you know, she hands the knife back to Aaron. She says, this is never the way.
Yeah.
So it's like she's almost too kind of sweet and wholesome to use a weapon in the first place.
Yeah. And then she kind of waxes philosophical a little bit.
Heck yeah.
And says, we all say that there's a heaven waiting for us, and yet we claw and beg and fight for a few more minutes at the end. And why do we do that?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, to me, it's obvious why. Because even if you believe in a heaven or an afterlife, you don't have any idea what that's going to be like. And you know what your life is like. So you want a few more minutes of what you know to live in the way you want them.
Well, it'd be scary to take the leap, even if you're a very true believer, right?
You would have to be so incredibly faithful and certain to not feel that way.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, you want a little bit more time with the people you love, the people around you.
Mm-hmm. And Aaron basically says, well, we're fighting for everyone else in the world.
Everyone else in the whole world.
People we've never even met. There's no greater love than that.
Mm-hmm. And then she says, okay, so I want you to take the boat and go out. Molotov cocktail from Bev through the window.
Bev via Sturge, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. I bet you she doesn't have an arm like that. No. That's Sturge for sure.
So you're right. The interior of the... Do you know whose house they were in? Was it
Sarah's?
I think
they were in Aaron's.
Okay. It bursts into flames. And Bev's being very creepy. She says,
Aaron Green, I'd like to finish our discussion.
I want to finish our conversation. What is she playing at? Like pretending to be civilized. I want to finish our conversation. I fucking hate her.
Well,
stupid
just,
boys.
She's so annoying, right?
Aaron, you want to finish our conversation.
But I think that it is ironic on purpose because she also just threw in gas lit on fire into
her home.
So she's not actually trying to coax her out. She's just being intimidating, I think.
Yeah, all bets are off. I'm destroying your home and I'm going to kill you.
All bets are off with Bev in a big way because her filter is gone and this episode is jarring at times. She's calling Aaron out. Aaron goes to leave and Annie stops her, right?
Yeah. Oh, it's so sad. And do you think it's like, I'm the oldest one?
I think it is like that because I believe she says something about like, get the kids out.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, and then I love it when, so Annie goes out to basically to delay Bev and Sturge.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And she says, you know, I've got no quarrel with you, Annie Flynn, as if that's something that you can throw a Molotov cocktail into someone's
say,
house.
Oh, sorry, that wasn't for you.
And be like, that's not for you. I've got no problem with you. You and I don't have beef. It's like, I have beef with you now because you did that.
You know, it was funny too, Annie, even before she went out when she was talking to Aaron, she's like, no, I'll go. I'd like a word with Bev.
I'd like a word
and
with Bev.
And she's like still so cute and nice even
she
then.
She is. Oh, and do you know what I love is as she's walking down the stairs, she says, I want to have a conversation with Aaron Green. And Annie says, yep, they're in there. Two children too. Just to remind you, yeah, you just threw a bomb at two children.
That's a great point. Yeah.
And she's like, oh, we're past that now, as if your actions don't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Same, her and Paul, they think that because of the end game that their actions don't matter, but that's just not the case. It's you know, it's the idea that's like how war crimes happen.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Thinking like that all bets are off and everything is okay and justified because of what the end is going to be.
Fair enough.
So anyway, that's where Bev's at mentally.
Mm-hmm. And then Annie comes down the steps, right? And Annie says to her, Bev, I'm going to tell you something that I wish you would have heard a long time ago and that a lot of people have probably wanted to tell you. And she says, Bev, listen to me. You aren't a good person. Mm-hmm. God doesn't love you more than anyone else. And you're not a hero. And you're certainly not a victim.
Yeah, I was like, it's all oh, so hell yeah. good.
That was the payoff that we've been like just tolerating Bev's behavior for 7 episodes now.
And I think one of my favorite parts of that little speech is God doesn't love you more than anyone else. Because you know Bev thinks he does.
I completely agree. I think that that is the hardest thing for her to hear. Even beyond, you're not a good person. Yeah. Bev's probably like, well, you don't even know what a good person I am.
Exactly.
But for her to hear, God loves you just as much or less than anybody else. Yeah. And that would be very hard and for
like,
her to hear.
Just as much as me, just as much as Ed, just as much as our manslaughtering son that you disdain so much. Yeah, exactly. Hmm. Just as much as like any, you know, criminal that's ever lived, he loves you just as much. And that's the whole point.
I know, which Bev should know.
Which Bev should know, but that's because she can't see the forest for the trees. She knows all these little bits of scripture, but she doesn't get the big picture, and she never has. Yeah. And you can tell that it rankles Bev. It has hurt Bev.
She says, wow, that was uncalled for. I'm like, speaking of being past that, like, are you kidding me? You just tried to kill them with a bomb. Yeah. You know what I mean? She's like, okay, that wasn't called for. Like,
you could have hit Annie for all you know. You could have just burned Annie to death for all you knew.
And she'd be like, it's okay, she'll come back. Yeah, but maybe she doesn't want to burn alive, though.
Exactly, before then. And so she then tries to get a dig in at Annie because she's been stung. And she says, well, if Riley Flynn is any indication of your parenting, like basically trying to say like, well, you're not.
You raised a manslaughtering son. Yeah,
exactly. Like trying to cast aspersions on Annie. And Annie is so like, this is the best response you could possibly have. And like, it just shows like a certain amount of wisdom, I think.
I agree. Because Bev says, you raised Riley a drunk and a murderer. And it must be a reflection. He must be a reflection on your parenting.
He must be a reflection of your parenting. And she says, yes, he is.
Every part of him.
Every part of him. And I just think that that is like, it's so wise and so poignant. It's like a beautiful line. I love it.
And she fully puts herself behind and supports and believes in her son.
Every bit of Riley.
So it's like finally someone showed up for Riley in these episodes when he died a hero. Mm-hmm. All these bad things have been said about him. And finally one more. And Annie was there to say like, no, he was a good person.
Yes. And to say that, yeah, you can make mistakes. You can do bad things and you can still be a good person. And he's my child. I'm going to love him no matter what. I just think it was a great line.
I loved it. It was so satisfying to see.
The idea that he could do bad things and still be a good person and be
or
a reflection.
Have been raised well.
And have been raised well and be a reflection of his parenting. And that's not, for her to not even for a moment take offense or pause. And
true.
I just think is wonderful. I think it's a great line.
And also these are things that Bev would never understand.
She couldn't understand.
She's not a parent herself in the first place.
She's not a parent and she does not love anyone unconditionally.
Right. And a couple of things in her speech, she said, yeah, you know what? God loved Riley just as much as he does you. Mm-hmm. And why is that so hard for you to hear? Why are you so upset by that? Mm-hmm. And Bev is just one of the worst type of religious people who's so sanctimonious. She holds herself in esteem over everyone because she thinks she's holier than them, holier than thou. Again, it just misses the point. The stories in the Bible of Jesus washing the feet of poor people and spending time with prostitutes and doing all these things that Bev wouldn't do. And it's meant to show that even he had humility in the face of other people, which Bev didn't. And meanwhile, she's saying, whoa, that's too far, Annie. How could you say that to me? She's orchestrating the murder of a whole island.
Yeah, yes.
And like driving it. She's not like, oh, whatever happens, happens. She's like, let's go kill them.
Yeah.
It's unreal. Yeah,
and let's open up the doors so that they can go kill people even faster and better. Oh, she's so...
Which even shows, Paul wasn't down with, right?
Yeah. She's so spiteful in this episode. I can't wait to talk about her behavior at the end.
Oh,
it's
same.
So, it's so despicable. It's... super wonderful confrontation here. Annie comes out on top big time, delivers it so well, and then Bev starts to get the right idea, unfortunately,
that they're stalling.
That she's stalling, and instantly, without a second's hesitation, she stabs herself in the neck.
Which was so smart, because it was very jarring to see.
It was, yeah.
And they rush over to her, but then because the blood's pooling, Sturge and Bev can't help but be distracted by eating it.
Yeah. So creepy. And then we're back with Paul.
We get like a Paul semi-monologue.
Oh my God, yes, another like long story to illustrate one simple point.
God feels every death.
About how God must experience deaths as a roar like a waterfall.
And he thought that he'd found a way to stop that waterfall by finding a vicious monster in a cave.
Paul has this misconception as well that death is the worst thing.
Yeah.
Because stopping deaths isn't going to stop the roar in God's ears. Because there would be, you know, like horrible abuses and all those things going on. And a lot of deaths are peaceful and fine and, you know, not like, you know what I mean?
I think that's his whole problem is
he's
looking at death as a failure or something like that.
As a universally bad thing.
Yeah, where it's certainly not.
No, and it's the way we're all going to go out.
And he's talking about sparrows and bugs and all, like every living creature.
Yep.
I don't think the animals are sitting around worrying about dying like he is.
If you think about it too deeply, you get lost in the weeds because like, okay, what about bacteria? Like, what about amoebas?
You know? The things that Noah welcomed onto the ark.
Exactly. Two.
Two amoeba.
Two amoeba.
One amoeba is an amoebo.
No, I think it's like cannoli and canolo. It's like
amoebe. And yeah, I mean, he got spaghetti, got two spaghettos on the arc because we've still got those.
Yeah, can you pass me that spaghetto?
Yeah, I just want one.
Not very hungry.
Biscotto.
But basically what he wants.
Domo arigato, Mr. Biscotto.
But basically what he wants is a do-over. He wants the opportunity.
He literally says that.
He wants to live a whole other life and get to live it with Mildred and Sarah.
He wants a second chance.
Yeah, which I do think is a sweet sentiment.
Yes, it's a nice sentiment. He says, you know, if I'm being honest, I did all this to save you from dying. And she's like, oh, okay. So like you killed everyone?
Is thanks. That, you know,
so, but you're right. I mean, to hear him describe it, and he's like, yeah, that's the reason I bribed and lied and smuggled that trunk here. That was a pretty hand-wavy way to explain how he got a living vampire from Jerusalem back to the continental United States, but that's fine. Yeah, he bribed someone.
And yada, yada, yada. Yada, yada. The vampire gets to the island.
And he dragged it. He was like, yeah, I guess he wasn't old at that point.
No, he was young and hearty.
Dragged it a far way.
I do think that it's a really sweet and sad idea to imagine him watching his daughter grow up at a distance and never being able to acknowledge her or the woman that he loved on this tiny little island. Like, that's really sad. And I like it being brought into this episode because
it's
I think
lore.
And it helps you bring him back to being someone that you can relate to after all the really intense, horrible things we've seen him do. It allows you to see him a bit more as like a sympathetic villain again. So I'm glad they brought it in this episode.
You're right, because, you know, basically, and I don't know if we've explicitly said it, but at some point he had a romantic relationship with Millie. They conceived Sarah.
Yeah.
Right. And he said that he was never brave enough. He watched her grow up from across the church. He was never brave enough to go sit with them. And then he goes on to say, you know, it was never a sin. What we did, it never felt like a sin. I was like, okay. And again, nice sentiment. Mm-hmm. Some very emotional reasoning on the part of Father Paul. Rules for thee, but not for me. He broke his vows. Not only that, but don't commit adultery is literally carved in stone in the Catholic doctrine.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So he's like
friggin' Moses lugged it down a mountain.
Guy.
And then he gets to the village and they're already worshiping idols. He's like, guys,
I was gone, man.
For however long he
probably
was gone.
Probably a long time. Yeah. But so what he did didn't feel like a sin. He's happy to tell people about sin, but this one, no, not very much. I was compelled probably again by God to rail Millie at the time.
And he was moving through me.
Oh, jeez. Yeah.
I think that, yeah, if you look at it that way, that as a way to excuse himself, then yeah, it's annoying. But it, yeah. I guess I framed it more in my head that that's a way to for him to tell her how he sees her as just a good thing.
It, and it was said in a
my
nice,
relationship
nice
not
way.
Being a sinful thing with you.
You're right. You're
but,
right.
But yeah, as a way to excuse himself, it's kind of pathetic and a little bit spineless, but.
And maybe he was appeasing her. Maybe he was telling like somewhat of a white lie to say how he felt about her. Like I could understand that too.
Yeah. So I do appreciate this little bit of story building, even though, like you say, it is hard to imagine that after having just been annihilated by the vampire that he brought to your doorstep, that you'd be like, yeah, sure. Tell me about your feelings, Paul.
All your friends are going to be dead.
Excuse me, not Paul, John.
Yeah, we could call him either one now because he certainly gets called John throughout the episode by Millie, right?
He does, he does.
And Millie has some great points. He said, you know, if you would have came and asked me, I would have given up the priesthood and been with you. And she says, well,
I was never going to do that.
I wasn't going to do that. My husband came back from the war. I wasn't going to ruin four lives.
Mm-hmm.
Only Bev and Paul could have had some similar type of thinking in terms of their impact on other people.
Yeah.
But something she also says is that, you know, John, we made our choices. We lived our lives. She, Sarah, grew up and we faded away. And that's the way it's supposed to work.
That's how it's supposed to go. You don't get to start all over again. I do really like the idea that at the beginning of the season, we're shown him staring at Sarah and Sarah saying the old priest used to do that and her thinking it was because she was gay. And that
oh,
he knew.
Oh, I didn't even put that together.
Because she's talking to like her date at yes. the time. And they're joking about it. But saying like, oh, it's like they knew. But it's like, no, it's not because he was a bigot. It's because he was your dad.
He's your dad.
And he loves you so much.
Yeah, he doesn't care that you're
gay. At least
gay.
He's not homophobic.
Not at all.
Yeah, just loves his gay daughter so much. His illegitimate gay daughter so very much. Mildred's little speech here, as you just said about her growing up and them fading away is just like reminiscent of Riley's warning that remember we are dust and to dust we shall return.
And Paul says that a second chance would be the real miracle.
For him, for you.
Yeah.
He can't see past the end of his nose.
Yeah, good point. Everyone except for Paul and the apostles knows that immortality is not meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
We see more scenes too of the vampire flying around. Which is mm-hmm. pretty cool. He flies, I think, yeah. to a home, and he himself breaks into a home
yeah.
and starts killing people.
Breaks right
people.
Through the window. What do you think of the lighting in these scenes where we're seeing things happen and it's kind of dark and people are running and you can't easily tell who everyone is?
That's a good question. I'm not sure I really picked up on that as an element, but now that you mention it, there's a lot of scenes with like people coming across a lawn
yep.
towards the heroes, and then they have to react to who it is and what they're doing.
You know what? I loved it. And yeah. I loved that, like, because it was kind of like discordant and confusing, but in an intentional way.
Yeah.
It was like you could hear someone saying, like, help me, and like running
yes,
at them.
Yes.
But then they all look the same, except for their eyes. So it's like, who's running away from the vampires and who's a vampire? You can't tell. So I actually really liked kind of the low lit people running at your heroes. It felt a little bit like video gamey in kind of a fun way.
That's cool. Felt like you had to have your head on a swivel because mm-hmm. there were people yes. everywhere. Everyone screaming. Warren's friend comes up to them.
Yeah.
Right? And he is.
You smell good.
He's staring at them with his creepy lit eyes and yeah. saying how good they smell. He's clearly going to attack them.
Mm-hmm.
And then Hassan basically tells him, like, stay back, mm-hmm. whatever.
Yeah.
And he calls him a raghead. It's like, wow.
He calls him a racial slur immediately. Do you think it's just that they're all thinking that they're all throwing caution to the wind because they're like, this is a different fucking world. I can say whatever I think.
I think just like you said about Millie knowing that it was end of days, they kind of have the sense that it's end of some kind of day anyway, like mm-hmm. it's some kind of era and all bets are off, like you just said.
Yeah.
It's just sad to think
then it's
that
like,
all
really,
of a
that's
sudden,
what you're going
to
do?
It's just sad to think that all of a sudden these cheap insults are coming mm-hmm. out, right? But, you know, Hassan shoots him, so.
Mm-hmm. And I like that Hassan, he's the one to break away from the group. I think just because he's like, I'm the fucking cop here. I'm going to, you know, serve and protect, and is still feeling like he's in his role, mm-hmm. even despite all the chaos around them.
Oh, yeah.
So like
for
that,
sure.
The whole group is still together at that point, but he's the one who's going to address the immediate danger there.
Yeah. And I believe Hassan also shoots Wade.
Yes, he
does.
Oh,
mayor,
and
right?
because Wade's like, Lisa.
He's trying to get Lisa yeah. to come. He's like beckoning her.
Yeah.
Right? And again, they know they're only buying themselves some time. But Hassan's still doing everything he can to, like, keep that group safe, mm-hmm. right? Because he's a great character.
Yes, he is. This is where the horror show becomes full horror, you know?
Yeah, it just descends into chaos, pretty much, right?
Yeah, it's very interesting to put the tropes of a horror movie across an entire season.
Yeah.
And I feel like Mike Flanagan does it like nobody else.
Yeah, this series is incredible, and I think that Hill House is even better. But
no, I disagree. This is my favorite one.
Hill House is scarier. That's for sure.
Yeah, you're right. Hill House is scarier.
It's like, I was terrified of Hill House.
Yeah, Hill House was legit scary.
It's like one of the all-time best jump scares, too.
Yeah.
You know the one I'm thinking of?
I know the one you're talking about.
Oh, I love that show.
I haven't rewatched that.
I've only seen it once.
Me too.
It just really stuck with me.
Yeah, it was great.
One thing that I thought was funny that I wanted to mention, Sturge is like talking to Bev, right? After they're done drinking from Annie, the house is ablaze. And he's like, I think we better put this out. It's like, you're not going to be able to put that fire
out,
Sturge.
No, how do you propose you're going to put it out?
That fire is going to rage, buddy. There's nothing you could do about that one.
And then he says it'll light the whole island up. And then
he does mention that with the wind, with how close everything is, like, what if it all goes up like it did in 84?
Bev has a light bulb go off and says, how about that?
Yeah, she says, well, the church didn't burn in 84.
Yeah, so it must be in a slightly different area.
And then she gets this idea, just like you said. She said, let this island be the flood and let St. Patrick's be the ark, meaning let everything burn. And okay, I see where she's coming from. She's having St. Maud level delusion. You know what I mean? Like, she's totally broken from reality in my mind. She thinks everything is a divine religious experience that's playing out in real time, and she can't see it.
She's also like a megalomaniac who wants to be in fucking charge, and she's like, clearly, now's my time. She's like, I can't wait to pick who lives and dies.
Even in charge is such a terrible thing. Yeah.
She can't wait to play God.
She really relishes it.
She absolutely does. She would not have had to play God if she had not orchestrated this idea of just having St. Patrick's there.
She made a false issue, like a false problem. She forced it.
She created that opportunity for herself.
And so I can see why she's playing into that, but I'm like, have you ever heard of hedging your bets, you stupid asshole? Rely on one wooden building not burning down for the salvation of everyone you know?
And it's funny, I was thinking to myself, I'm like, well, what if there was like one other canoe and they could just like, one person could just lay under the canoe until nighttime, you know?
I thought about that too. One thing that Bev says too, which is just so wicked, right? She says, the citizens, well, the good ones, they know where to go in a storm. So again, she's lost all perspective and she's become a zealot if she wasn't one before.
Yeah.
Right. And she might have been one before. And she's just completely narcissistic. And like you said, she can't wait to be the one who says, you get to live, you get to die. And she thinks that she knows the difference between a good person and a bad one.
Yeah. Well, she doesn't.
No, we'll confidently say she doesn't.
Yeah.
She's kind of seated herself as the arbiter of good and evil. And she's gladly taking that role on, even though no one would ask her to or believe she was up to the job.
No.
It's really incredible. She's the most wicked person.
Yep.
And, she'd probably consider Aaron Green to be a bad person. Yeah. Even though Aaron was sat there every day for church just like she was, she doesn't like Aaron. So she'd be like, well, she's a bad person. I don't like her. She's not good.
Yep.
You know, it's like she doesn't actually have any kind of rubric. She just picks and chooses based on her own whims.
Yep. And it's not based on, you know, the golden rule. It's based on other arbitrary rules that she thinks are more important. Like, I think that she would judge Aaron for the fact that she's having a baby without her husband.
Even though she was married.
Even though she was married. She would probably judge her for the fact that she used to use substances.
Okay. Yes, she would.
And I think that those would be more important to her than the fact that Aaron treats everyone with respect and is kind. Those things don't matter to her in the same way.
No, and she might almost be irked by them. She might almost think they were false or that they were frivolous or something or that they were paper thin. But really, Aaron's doing more to be a good person than Bev, who's just kind of following a certain set of rules, you know? And that kind of comes down to the whole concept of religion, too. Like, can you be a good person without religion? And if you are being a good person without religion, then is it more meaningful because you're not doing it with the promise of the afterlife? Although Aaron does believe in the afterlife. There's just whole lot of big questions that can be applied to it.
Yeah, and I think that it doesn't matter why you're being a good person, as long as you're being a good person.
Fair enough. And I mean, I think it's important to be a good person. Mm-hmm. That takes, obviously, that's a bit of a nebulous concept.
Yeah.
But most of us can agree on the fundamentals. You know, Bev is experiencing some very grandiose delusion, in my opinion.
Yeah.
She thinks she's at the forefront of a basically like rapture level event.
Literally, yeah.
Right? Meanwhile, it's all of their own construction and God has little to nothing to do with it.
God's like, do you know how many sparrows are dying today? I don't have time for this.
What was that? There's this waterfall. They did fucking what on that island?
Oh my God.
And I gotta talk to Polly.
He's like, one of my guys? Yeah. One of my guys did that?
And we also know, and we've spoken about it a bit before, but when it comes to delusion, when it comes to breaks from reality, there can be a strong likelihood sometimes that they might have a religious aspect at times in terms of the person's own thinking, right?
It happens a lot.
Yeah. And you can totally understand, because if you are seeing things or thinking things or feeling things you can't explain, and you're a religious person or you believe in those kind of supernatural powers, of course, it's where they might end up.
And it's totally cultural. So like we live in a place with a lot of, you know, more likely to run into someone who is well acquainted with the Christian faith. So that's where what your delusions are. Whereas, you know, if you lived in a place where the majority of people around you were Hindu, I imagine that your religious delusions would probably take a different shape.
Makes sense. It's like the building blocks that you've already got, right? I wanted to ask you about this too. What did you think of the scene when we get to see Ed and Annie reunite across the lawn?
So sweet. So sweet. I love the like big hug that they give, and then she kisses his face a bunch, because I just think, you know, you can imagine being reunited with your partner or your child or something. You just, yeah, wanting to like hug them and feel them and give them a bunch of kisses. I feel like bang on. It's just very like evocative of that is exactly what you would do if you were reunited that way. And I really love the conversation that they have as well.
Me too.
Of saying that the blood on them is their own respectively. Mm-hmm. And Annie has been a vampire slightly less time than Ed. And so she asks him, like, is that what I'm going to be? Am I going to be like them? Am I going to be just an animal? And he says, no. When I saw them doing what they were doing, I thought that it must be irresistible, but it's not. You can. I feel it too. I'm hungry too, but I haven't done anything. So isn't that such a chilling, you know, realization to put over the whole show?
It for sure is. And Ed is saying, yeah, what they're doing to people, like he can't even reconcile it, nor can Annie probably. But she does admit to him, I've got the hunger. Like, and you're right. She says, is that what's going to happen to me? And he says, no, there's a choice in it, right? At least to some degree. And obviously that is the addiction analogy of the show kind of coming to fruition. Hopefully not in a way that would be a judgment against someone struggling with addiction. Might be a little on the nose in that way.
I would hope that it wouldn't be interpreted by people to minimize the physiological impulse of addiction, because it is so difficult to wrap your head around. Like,
yeah.
I mean, I might know about it intellectually, but I can't even really understand it, how it must feel. But it's so like interconnected. The psychological, physiological, mental aspects of addiction and dependency are so interrelated that it's hard to even explain to people.
I agree. I think it's like a conversation we had earlier in this series. It's like you and I use drugs that are legal to use. We're lucky enough that our biology and our psychology don't run that way, that we're not battling against an addiction or a burgeoning addiction, because it's just not there. I mean, you know, we don't have the compulsion to continue to use those things when we're not meaning to.
And you don't know until you know it.
Right. And it's almost like the conversation we had earlier about, okay, yes, we made the right choices. We got some degrees. We got jobs in those fields. But we can also look at it as the way, in a way of, we were set on a path that was a good one. We had a great upbringing, grew up middle class, all the rest. We didn't mess that up. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So for us to think, well, we're not addicted, it's not the same. You know what I'm saying?
Because it's not some accomplishment.
We're not battling against it. Yeah. We're not keeping ourselves from being addicted. It just doesn't happen to be the way that those drugs interact with us.
Yep. It's not because I'm morally more upstanding than any other person. It's just like, whew, I dodged a bullet.
And it's certainly not because we're working harder. There are a lot of people addicted to substances that work a lot harder to not use them than we do. And who knows?
I lucked
there's,
out.
There's people in every situation.
Yeah.
Some people maybe recognized early that they had addictive qualities too. And for that reason went straight laced. Who knows? But at least where you and I are concerned, it would be very naive of us to compare ourselves to someone who had dealt with an addiction.
Yeah. Like I've definitely spoken to people who I think realized like, oh yeah, that felt a bit too good.
Totally. And good for them. But I think the example with Annie and Ed, though, it's a well-drawn-out scene. I worried a bit that it might send someone the wrong impression about addiction.
Yeah.
But I think that Ed is trying to get at, there's still autonomy, and that's an encouraging thing.
There's still autonomy. Right? I guess what I want to, the point that I'd like to crystallize is just, it's not as simple as just a choice.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, that's what I want to say.
But what it made me think of was a bit about, so it's about choosing to move forward through extreme discomfort with actions that are in line with your values, right?
Yeah.
So that's a concept that is at the center of action and commitment therapy. And a big part of it is to identify what your values are and to really be familiar with those. And then the goal is, okay, is this decision I'm about to make going to take me a step closer to my values and what I want to be, or a step further away? And then learning to deal with the discomfort in terms of your coping and try to make the decisions that you feel are in line with your values rather than how you're feeling right in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
So that is what I was thinking when Ed was describing it that way. So pretty interesting anyway, eh?
Yeah, I'm glad we got to some mental health chat because we really hadn't yet.
And this is like a fast-paced, brutal, violent episode, you know what I mean?
But I know, it's just for our brand, the sake of our brand.
Got to stay on brand, got to stay on mission. Let's close the loop. You know what else I like? This is another mental health thing right next. So Sarah says, she's speaking to Aaron. She says, do you think the kids got away? Do you think they made it to the boat? We'll never know. And then she says, you know what?
They did
make it. And I'm like, perfect. So you're taking an unhelpful thought and you're swapping it for a helpful one. You're literally never going to know the answer. So there's no harm, no foul.
Yep. Yeah.
You're choosing to spend time focusing on a positive thought that's going to make you feel better in something that won't matter because you won't know the answer. Why not?
Do you know what's a really valuable place to use that method?
Mm-hmm.
Is when you are considering what another person's intentions might be.
To assume the best?
Just assume the best. It comes up a lot in nursing because situations dealing with people can get extremely frustrating.
Yeah.
And sometimes someone will do something that, you know, will really frustrate and bother you. And so you have the choice. You can think they did that to piss me off, or you could think they did that because they're sick, because they're tired, because they're confused, whatever. So it's difficult to do sometimes.
And no one can do it all the time, for sure.
But, you know, trying to do your best to think, okay, they did that because they're sick. Because it's like, you'll never know what their intentions truly were underneath it all. So you might as well assume it's the one that's not going to piss you off.
But the funny thing about that is you feel like you're doing it for them. You're really doing it for you.
Yeah, it makes you
feel
better.
It's going to help you get through your day. It's all about how we reframe things in our mind. And we can, through like inner turmoil, give ourselves a good day or a bad day sometimes, which is amazing to think. I mean, power's in our hands, at least to some degree with things like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
The A-team, the heroes, I've got them listed as the A-team here. They've started their counter-strike because they're burning the boats, which is awesome.
Yeah, they're doing a lot of burning.
Yeah, and it's like, okay, so they're burning all these homes. We know they want to escape on the boats. Well, I guess we'll take out their boats then.
Yep.
That's pretty perfect. And Lisa and Warren end up holed up in what was the vampire's like hideout.
Yeah. Yes, they wind up holed up in his hideout and they are overcome by a disgusting smell.
Yeah.
Smell of decay.
Decay of, you know, squirrels, raccoons, and dead bodies,
and corpses
that were tied up.
And dying, because that's a little bit of a jump scare. One of them has a light casting it around the room and comes across the bodies, one of which you can see his bowl. You can recognize his bowl.
Yes.
And then we actually see
Bill,
excuse me. And then one of which you can see is actually being currently fed on by the vampire. And then little jump scare. She turns her head. She's still alive as she's being preyed upon there.
Yeah, what did you think about that scene?
I think full, like, horror imagery.
Me too.
Super, like, gross, yucky. I love it. Glad it's there.
Gross, yucky. It's great. You know what? Exactly. You know what else is really interesting and is a seed sown, because we know I get that saying wrong sometimes, for later in the episode, because Lisa literally shoots it with a shotgun, mm-hmm. and it doesn't stop feeding. Mm-hmm. And at one point, when she shoots it again, it literally waves its arm at her, be like, "Stop
get,
it!
Get out of here!"
But it doesn't even lift up its head. It just keeps feeding, right? So. Mm-hmm. It is extremely difficult to deter it when it's in that mode of feeding on someone, mm-hmm. right? Which was really
Which will be its own undoing.
Yeah, it will be hoisted by its own petard later, certainly. And it built a rod for its own back. And, you know, one in the hand is worth two in the bush.
Yep. That's what they say.
Those are my idioms.
You're an idiom.
How dare you,
oh, do you know
stupid
what?
Idiom.
At work yesterday, I used an idiom that you and I would consider to be commonly used.
Oh.
And nobody in the office knew what I was saying.
Was it a one-armed paper hanger?
No, I said, you can't swing a cat without hitting.
Oh, I love that one.
Where you can't swing a cat without hitting something.
They're and like, why the hell would you swing a cat?
Everyone was kind of like, okay. And I was like, and then I was so embarrassed because I had kind of been monologuing a bit. I was like just talking. I was telling a story and I said it. And then everyone
just
was
stood
listening.
Silent.
And they were like, what does that mean?
Apparently, there's one I say a lot at work because one of my counselors, when I was in a meeting with them, they're like, well, as John would say.
What was it?
That's a cat that you can't put back in its bag.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
and
I don't
do
use
say that.
That
one a lot. Wow. So it'd be like if you became famous among your friend group for being the designated driver because you are so diligent and make sure everyone gets home safe. So then you're forever the designated driver. Right? Mm-hmm.
That's me.
I know. I knew it would ring true to you.
Yeah. And then it's like my husband, if I'm like, I'd like to drink tonight. He's like, well, then you better get drunk. He's like, don't have just one or
do
two.
Do not waste it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what, though? That's like
don't
you
waste your
with the fucking blueberries. So her husband, in order to get nutrition, will like slam a handful of blueberries into his mouth and leave the house. You know what I mean? And she's like, he didn't even relish those blueberries.
I'm like, berries are expensive. you need to like enjoy them. So I'm like, you can have a banana or an apple. You can have the cheap fruits. No berries for you. Oh, we've lost the plot.
Yeah, certainly we have. So what Lisa decides to do, she's kind of the more assertive one than Warren. Did you agree?
Yeah.
She's like, fuck it. She tries to shoot the vampire. And then she pours the gasoline in that home and lights it on fire. Mm-hmm. The vampire comes screaming out of there and on fire, but flies away. Mm. And then what did you think? I don't know if it's like a thing, but it just stuck with me when Sturge is like, Lisa Scarborough.
Yeah, I know.
Your dad is looking
it's
for you.
It's scary.
Like it, why is he talking like that? That was creepy, right?
I don't know.
It really, I don't know what it was, but I was like, ooh.
It's
gave
scary.
Me the heebie-jeebies.
Do you know what's scary about it? It's the unhurriedness of it. Because, you know, like, they're fucking trapped.
He was confident.
Yeah.
You know, he wasn't like, whoa, stay there. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, I'm coming to get you. You didn't have to sneak up on her from, like, down the road. Hey, Lisa. Let's bring you to your dad so that he can drain you of blood.
And true, they did just Michael Myers walk after them. Like, Lisa and Warren run away. They just keep walking. They're basically like, we'll
they
get
left
her.
The gun, which why?
So yeah, I was just interested to hear your thoughts on that. Mm. Bev has also made basically a barracks in the rec center with like 80 beds, 60 beds.
Yeah.
Do vampires sleep?
I guess they
why the
get
beds?
Cozy.
Yeah. Yeah. Who knows? But I was just thinking about that. And at first I thought, well, do they really have enough beds for the whole island? Answer's probably
they
no,
don't.
But she don't care.
Nope.
Right? She thinks all the better. She begins also ringing the church bells, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, and then you can, all the different characters clock it, and that brings you around the island there.
So she's beckoning people to the church. She walks into the cathedral proper. She sees Paul. She says, ah, you're up. Praise be.
Yeah, and she's like, oh, you're so forgiving.
And she goes, oh, and you too.
Yeah,
about
seriously.
Millie.
Yeah.
And she says, well, Father, you're a stronger man than me. Still, though. You know, I just don't get why Millie's here, basically.
Yeah, when she goes, still.
Again, Bev with Jesus and the prostitutes and all that, and the lepers and the poor people. Did you just miss that whole part?
Did you skip those chapters? Did you skim them?
Yeah, I mean, it's a long book. She takes them out. She shows Paul and Millie the fires, and she's kind of like, look, You know, look at the, all this glory here. What did you think about that? She references the ark. What did you think about Paul's reaction here? When she's saying, look, we set everything on fire so that everybody can only come to the church and we're only going to let some of them in.
I really liked watching the people come down the the path. They look like zombies or something.
Yes, and kind of like when they were doing the hymn in that other episode, right?
Yeah, except now they're the undead.
Now they're like
great.
So creepy.
When you say his reaction, you mean that he seems like startled at what she's done and is very against what she's done, and does it feel pretty hypocritical to you considering he was the mastermind ultimately of the whole thing?
I do have issues with it. She says, you and I will decide the good from the bad. Yeah. Who survives?
Yeah.
And Paul has completely swung.
Oh, completely. And when he says, it wasn't supposed to be about me. It was supposed to be about God.
That sounded quite a bit like him. And I wrote that down, and it does a great job to show Paul's disgust in her hero worship of him. I thought that was good.
Yes.
She's like, Bev, it's not about me. So I thought that was great. But then also, that certainly isn't the way that Paul was going about everything.
No.
You know what I mean? He got wrapped up in it all,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, he did.
He thought it was about him for a while there, yep, too. Now he's totally different.
Yep.
And just because she let people out? Like, is that the point that he swung like that and turned?
I think that he is just, having seen the way everything played out, he's just like, it's like in Green Room. It's like Gabe being like, no, I'm out of this now. I'm
like
not
once
into
you see
it.
The way the sausage is made.
Yeah.
When he's like, oh, this is not good.
I know,
oh,
but now he's just acting a little bit righteous again.
Like, you worked so hard to make it happen,
yeah,
dude.
Exactly. And he's like, well, this is so bad. This
Oh, no.
And even later when it says, this is monstrous, it's like, you...
Come on.
You orchestrated it.
What did you think about the angel? Not monstrous?
No.
Oh. And then Bev starts to get really upset, and she says, not you too. Please tell me not you too. Basically, she's looking at him like the same way she looked at Riley. And Bev is thinking that Paul changing his mind about everything is a test for her to overcome, that God is basically testing her mettle.
As if God is spending all of his day just setting up these little chess pieces for you personally, Bev. He's got bigger fish to fry.
She just thinks she's better than everybody.
Yeah.
And she says, well, I guess virtue isn't a virtue if it costs nothing anyway.
Oy vey, yeah.
That's something they needed to hear through the whole show. It's like, no, you can't just buy someone immortality by having them drink,
but
covertly
she's using
drink
it wrong.
A drink.
Yeah.
They can't just buy it for the whole town.
I don't even know what point she's trying to make here.
Bev is saying now she's losing Father Paul, and she had felt like a connection there. It's like her staying true means that she has to leave Paul
got
behind.
Got it.
Right? Which she doesn't want to do because she's kind of got the hots for him in a religious way.
Yep.
And she says, I guess it's not you anymore, meaning she thinks it's her. Okay, I'm the leader now.
She's like, stepping up to that.
There's some big holy shoes to fill, but I think I'm up to the task.
What kind of shoes do priests wear?
That's a good lie. Are they allowed to just wear anything? Because then it's probably New Balance. A lot of these guys are old.
New Balance, yeah.
You know what I mean? For their knees. It would suck if they had to wear some fancy priest shoe that wasn't the most comfortable.
Clogs.
Yeah.
Like wooden ones, yeah. not like Crocs.
Maybe like the ones that St. Maud wears with the tacks inside.
Oof. Yeah, maybe.
Oh, jeez. She calls Millie Babylon, the great mother of horrors.
Yes, she does.
It's like, oh.
And can you imagine calling like an 80-year-old lady a whore?
God.
It's just weird.
And she says she hopes they enjoy the sunrise.
Yeah, I truly hope you enjoy the sunrise.
Do you? Oh, you do?
Oh, you do? You hope I enjoy it? Oh.
Ellen knows the owner.
Big whoop.
I thought it was great, too, when Sturge basically tells her, oh, well, they burned the boats.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, well, it's fine. Wade will call the fairies. And then she's like, who burned the boats?
Yeah.
That was awesome.
Yeah, they who.
Warren and Lisa are able to make it into the canoe. And she says a prayer for her parents first, that they find peace, that they not worry about her. I thought, like, she's a pretty selfless kid.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a kid who it seems to be taking the good from religion.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I was going to say, and very faithful, very religious.
Putting it to work, yeah.
And that's one of those things where, you know, we talk about organized religion as being, in many cases, just a good and positive thing. Like, what an amazing thing to be able to take any kind of solace after the night that they've had, you know, if it gives her that little bit of reassurance to, you know, hold her crucifix and pray, yes, pray for her parents and feel that she's being heard. That's really valuable.
And in any situation, in any hard situation, if we have some faith to fall back on, you could see why it would be helpful.
Right? Absolutely.
And so, you know, religion and organized religion, despite its flaws and its bloody history, can offer a lot of strength and good things to these people as well, especially, like we said, older folks, people who are lacking in community. It can be a really positive influence in their life, right?
And here we're seeing her really take charge, like we've talked about, because she tells Warren, because he says, and my mom and my dad and my brother, they're also dead, right? And she goes, yep.
And he said, I would have been so different at that last dinner.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my God, poor Warren.
And every single person who's lost someone abruptly has thought that.
Of course, they know what that's like, right? And we could all identify with Warren at that time, for sure. I mean, I can't, like, the amount of times that I've been sat on the edge of an island waiting to get into my canoe, the vampires are coming, yep, but I'm like, oh, I'm not going to see that person again. I wish I would have told them this or that.
Tale as old as time.
Yeah. So I want to ask you, there's a scene with a guy who we don't know, I don't think, named Howard Hobbs.
Mm-hmm.
And Bev identifies him. She says, oh, basically surprised to see him there. And she says, I don't recall seeing you in church once.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's crying. He said, yeah, I killed my wife and my sons tonight. And she's like, well,
yeah,
you know,
my boys.
Hate to tell you this, but if you only would have been a religious person, you could have brought them back easily. But you don't know that because you're not a good person and you weren't religious. Mm-hmm. What did you think of that scene? Because I was in agony.
Yeah, she doesn't hate to tell him that. She loves to tell
him
that.
Yes.
And she doesn't, like we say, she doesn't read her own fucking book because she thinks that you have to be religious to be a good person. But what's the story of the good fucking Samaritan?
Right.
The whole idea was that that was not like a member of the community, and yet he was a good guy. That was the whole fucking point of that parable.
Good point.
And she can't accept that. And it's so sad because poor Sturge was like, he's such, like we say, such a simple guy, right? Like, and he's like, this guy's nice to me.
No room for him inside, I'm afraid.
I saved him, Bev. He was always nice to me. Sorry, Howard.
I think he's a good person. That's why I saved him. I want him to go on. I want him to live.
And she thinks that Sturge doesn't get it, but she doesn't get it.
Yeah.
Like, she can't conceive of what a good person actually is.
She says to Sturge, in very special instances, you can save some people.
Yes.
And he's like, yep, great.
Oh,
this is a good,
save the good ones.
This is a good guy. I'm going to save this guy. And it's got not good enough for Bev. And it's, yeah, so despicable that she's like, she wants to cause him more pain.
Yeah, and she's rubbing his nose in it.
Absolutely.
She's such a heartless person, especially by now. She's saying, yep, you could have saved them if only you were a man of faith.
But
it's
not.
Like, she's taking him becoming a vampire as an inevitability, mm-hmm, which it wasn't. So she's saying, basically, you didn't prepare for this. It's like, no,
yeah,
I didn't.
You idiot.
You set upon me and made me a vampire. I didn't prepare for this.
Yeah, I was attacked.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Bev, you suck. And
you suck.
And Samantha Sloyan, perfect performance. No notes.
Let's give her flowers.
Yo, it's certainly. Although it's hard because I've like I said, I wouldn't want to meet her in real life. I'm not sure how I'd react. Bev is acting like if there was someone who got on the yearbook committee and therefore all of their friends were featured on many pages of the yearbook. And you're like, well, we know why that happened. Mm-hmm. And that's Bev right now. But she's like incarnate, that kind of attitude.
Yeah. And then it's almost like Old Yeller here, where it's like, he's my dog. I'm going to go put him down.
Sturge is like,
he like takes him away.
I know how much you like the water. Yeah. Why don't you come with me? And
he's like,
why don't you watch the sunrise?
He's like, Howie, I'll throw you some sticks. I know how much you love the water. And this is where, so Howard is.
Howard falls to the ground in grief.
Yeah, falls to the ground in grief. And this is where Father Paul goes, this is monstrous. I would never.
Yeah, he's like, geez, leave my name off it, guys, because I'm not okay with this behavior.
Like, he's like, Bev, out of line. Meanwhile, he was right there with her for most of it.
He's orchestrated the whole thing. But he does say he's allowed.
Yes.
If everyone's not allowed, then this is not a house of God.
Yeah, which is also like great, passionate, which is like exactly right. Like he's tuned back in to the way it should be.
He's realized.
Right now, yeah. And he's like, yeah, if everyone is not welcome in this house, then it's not God's house, is what he's saying.
And I'm all good for people having epiphanies. I'm all good for people changing their behavior to the better at any time.
Too little too late here,
Polly, but...
And so he, as he's going in, which I also think is great that he's like, fine, you guys go in your rec center. This is my fort and I'm going to have people in this one.
And no Bevs allowed.
No Bevs allowed. And so he says, everyone's welcome in the church, which I think is great. But as he's going up into the church to lead Howie in there, he sees Sarah and she's already pouring the gas. It's already mostly out and they catch eyes with each other. And he says, good. He's like, you know what? That is a good idea. Let's burn this motherfucker to the ground.
And he also says, God, I'm proud of you.
Yeah. And he says, oh, what else did he say? He's,
wish your mother and I could have told you, but God, I love you so much.
And do you know what? I kind of like the using God's name. And they do in several places.
That is a good point. Yeah.
Like, oh my God, whatever. And it's like the idea of using God like that, saying, oh my God, or saying Jesus is... to use their names in vain, but like we do that all the time colloquially. Everyone does it, but I think that it's used to like in a really interesting way here of him who is so religious, and it's like it's almost like you want to say, oh, he's using it in vain, but he's not. It's almost like you could see it as a
it's like an exclamation of like,
but like
euphoria is not the right word, but there's like some weight to it in terms of,
there's absolutely weight to it, like to
like
his
Eureka
God
almost.
Yeah, it's like,
or
God,
hallelujah, I should
or
say.
He could even be speaking directly to him. God, I am proud of my daughter.
Great point.
You know, like making, and I think that that is just, it's beautiful and it's subtle, but I really like it.
And this show is really well written, so I'm sure it is meaningful, right?
Yeah, like, God, I'm so proud of you. I just think it's like, what a beautiful thing. And I also think that he could not have expected any better reaction from Sarah than what he got.
Because
he says, I think he says, I love you as well. She's obviously not going to say, I love you,
yeah,
because she didn't even know he was her dad. But he says, I wish I could have gotten to know you. And she says, me too.
Yep.
I wish that too.
And then blam.
Yeah. One gunshot and bam.
One gunshot and bam. Hey, Mr. Onstein.
Sturge shoots Sarah dead.
Down goes Sarah. Yeah.
Do you like, believe in miracles?
And here is where we need to give our flowers to Annabeth Gish, which
is... Oh, is that Sarah's name?
That is Sarah's name.
I agree. Like, I almost looked at her as a second level character when I first watched it, but yeah, she's very integral
she's
to
part
this
of the
story.
A-team. Yeah, yep. She's one of our heroes.
And she does a great job. She's very believable the whole way through.
And like, John goes and tackles poor Sturge.
John/Paul.
Yeah, poor Sturge the Stooge. Just gets like,
I know. He was just
tackled
trying
to do
what he thought he should.
He was trying to do what he thought that he should. They get in a little scuffle fight.
He's choking him to death.
He's a little scuffle. And then Mildred goes, aww, John, and wondering what he is having this outburst over. They rush back in and like her running up and saying like, oh, my baby.
Yeah.
Oh, like it makes me want to cry right now just to, because, you know, you're always your parents' baby no matter how old you get. So I just think it's so like beautiful, this like grown woman being like, her mom is saying like, my baby, crying over her.
I knew
that
you
was going to get me
I
real
knew
good.
that would bother you and that you would love it.
Yeah.
Because it's like considering a mother who has been aged down, which kind of makes it a little different.
Yeah.
But calling her daughter of a certain age.
40s, yeah.
Older.
Yeah.
Baby.
My baby.
And not just that, but like baby as a name. You know what I mean? And I just thought, wow. And that really drives home the concept we've spoken about before. It's like everyone's removed to a certain degree from being a baby, but we were all a baby, right? And it's just like there's something very innocent about it.
It's so sad. Just her two parents, you know, like weeping over her. And John tries to bring her back.
By spilling his blood in her mouth.
Putting his blood in her mouth, and she spits it back out.
Yes, okay. So he's making some deeply pained noises, too, as he's tried, and she spits it out. Just excellent performance by Hamish Linklater.
And I also think some great just eyeball acting from Annabeth Gish, because she's not saying anything. All she's doing is spitting and looking at them. And yet I feel like it's so, what she's trying to say is so clear. It's like,
so
no,
assertive in
I'm
what
not,
she did.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not going that way.
You're right. She had autonomy in what she did.
Yes, she did.
And Paul has reverted to being like a baby, and he's back to his naive self because he's ripping open his veins to give her his blood. He's saying, it's okay. It's okay. It's okay. And he's crying like, Paul, it is not okay.
It's not okay.
She doesn't want what you're trying to give her, and you should know that. She has rejected it. Her death isn't okay. Sarah wouldn't want what you had on offer with the immortal life, with the blood, and you can't make her death okay. It's not as simple as someone just got shot. It's okay. I'm going to bring her back. That's not it.
Paul is like an Icarus. Like, he wants it all. He wants everything to be okay. He wants to have it all.
Well-intentioned in ways, but so misguided.
And so selfish. He does want it all for himself.
He wants his family. Right? And who could blame him?
And
but
it's like, that seems like a funny thing to say is selfish, because it's like, it's kind of a simple desire in some ways. And yet it is, obviously, the way that it has been presented for him.
It'd be like me not ever wanting my child
to grow up,
leave town for work, for anything, because I want to keep them with me, even if it might be to their benefit or they want to. If I were to try to stop that, it would be selfish, and it would be like wanting to keep us together. So in a way, it's like, it's almost like a bit of a paradox, but I agree with what you're saying. Very quickly too. So Sarah's died. Millie delivers this anecdote about her having always had a favorite place when she was a kid, which was a little bridge by the marsh. I wish they would have established that earlier.
Yeah.
So Millie goes almost right into this problem solve. Like, her child just died.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, her favorite place was always this little bridge. Great. Fantastic. Paul and Millie have been together plenty of times. I would have loved for her to just tell him about that. Then he could have scooped her up
and brought her to the
and
bridge.
Started walking, and we all know where he's going.
Or even if she said, you know, like, Sarah's favorite place, and he goes to the bridge. You know, even if he just,
perfect.
Like, finished
that
her
sentence.
Yeah, that
also would have been great.
Yeah.
I just wish they would have given it to us earlier than that.
I know what you mean. So heartbreaking watching their child die. And it doesn't matter how old that child is, they're still your child. Like, oh, it's so heartbreaking. Like you say, you knew that part was going to really hit home for me. Parent-child stuff in movies has always...
It's hard to watch.
It's always really gotten me. Like, you know, The Fault in Our Stars?
Yeah, I remember that one.
So when that was like really popular, I was like a teenager.
Yeah, so, me too.
No, you weren't. You were very old by then, old and wise. And the book and the movie were super popular in my age group.
It was a big craze.
So I felt like watching the movie, everyone's like, oh, like, you know, Hazel and what's the guy's name?
Inseldorf Egelbort.
Yes,
or are you talking about the character name?
Inseldorf Egelbort.
That's the actor's name.
It's not August, is it?
It is August, yes. Okay.
So August and Hazel, everyone's like, oh, you know, about their romance and stuff. But for me, it's the parents and being worried because she's dying in it.
Yes.
It's all the parent stuff that got me so bad. And I can't even.
That whole movie, it was an assault.
Yeah.
And you know, okay, Mike Flanagan certainly went back to the well on the father-daughter, father-son stuff all through this series. So he doesn't mind hitting that same bell on us constantly, right?
No, he really rung our bells.
How long he knew in the script writing process that Sarah was going to die like that, right? He's like, this will be big.
Day one, Sarah dies.
Yeah, and then he wrote the story around that.
Around it, yeah.
So we get the quick anecdote about the bridge anecdote. Millie is the one who gets to finish Sarah's work. And as she's leaving, she knocks down a candle. And Sarah had been pouring gas all through the church. So it goes up like a tinderbox.
I was going to say tinderbox too.
Goes up like a ton of bricks. And I thought that was good. Like, were you satisfied to see that it was Millie who got to do it? Did you think narratively that was a payoff?
I was satisfied.
Okay. Good. Oh, thanks. Great answer. I was. Yes. And then as that's happening, obviously the crowd of vampires is reacting, but they also see, and Sturge, you know, hits Bev to say, hey, look at that, because Hassan is dousing the rec center in gas.
Yeah, he was just doing it behind their backs.
Like, literally, you just see this character in the back.
Yeah, in the dimness.
Almost cartoonish. And as Bev grabs a gun and shoots Hassan in his leg.
Yeah.
She runs up to him. You disgusting viper. You'd burn us in our homes. Mm-hmm. Goes so far in on the racism.
Yeah.
A couple times.
Terrorist.
Well, yeah. A couple times she's been like, well, let's see if we can find where that terror-loving sheriff is.
Yeah.
Is he terror-loving? Yeah.
At what point was he ever terror-loving?
Since when has he become a terrorist? Like, they don't even have an inkling that that's the truth.
No, nothing at all.
Hey, that terror-loving sheriff, like, huh?
Yeah, it's like, you're burning people alive. That sounds pretty, you know, terrifying to me.
God.
And then he's like, you know, thirsty, huh? Basically, when the blood comes, and she's like, nope.
Not for dirty blood, exactly. She says. Then he kind of laughs to himself and he goes, wow.
Yeah.
So even he is baffled. Yeah, no. Even in this moment, he's got a bullet in his leg.
No, I love it when he does. He goes, wow.
So awesome.
Yeah.
He's being set upon by vampires and he's still staggered by her racism.
Yes. He's like, I can't believe
he's
you.
He's like, oh my God. I can't despite believe you just said that.
Everything that's happening. Yeah, I can't believe you just said that.
Wow.
I like it when he does say, though, she's like, oh, well, I can't believe you did it when it was empty. And not while we were all in there. And he says, well, it's not empty, is it?
Well, it isn't, though, is it?
He says, clean up on aisle 5.
Yeah. You're right, because then Aaron kind of walks backwards out the front door.
Yeah, and then gets got.
She's still pouring the gas. She's ready to light it with a lighter, and the angel sweeps her up and takes her down.
Yeah. So she's been attacked.
The lighter's fallen to the ground.
Hassan is nowhere near the lighter, and he's now been shot in the stomach as well.
And everyone's basically surrounded him.
Yeah, he's got nowhere to go. And then Ali comes and picks up the lighter, and he's obviously been witnessing this whole thing.
Yep.
And this is just, I feel like, a good wake-up call for Ali, because even as, again, Bev is trying to sweet-talk him, she doesn't even know his fucking name.
Boy.
She says, boy.
Yeah.
She doesn't even know his name.
Do you know what, though? Did you think, as I did, that that was an allusion to the scene in the church before where Hassan's like, Ali, come on, let's go. And she's like, no, stay here. And if you have faith, then. So it was like in reverse this time, because he's not going to listen to Bev this time. And he throws the lighter into the rec center and up it goes.
Yep. And then he's going to go help his dad. But this is just great because it's such an instant dissolution of their power, because as soon as the rec center goes up, everyone clears out and Bev's by herself because
she's the only one stood there looking at it.
Yep, because they're like, well, there's nowhere to go, so we're going to go off and accept our fates and die, and she just can't. Every single other person in that moment accepts their fate.
That's
she can't.
That's really a good point.
Because they don't run away screaming, trying to look for a place. They all wander away knowing they're about to go up in smoke.
And in fact, she gets desperate. She starts saying, there must be somewhere we can hide, but there must be somewhere.
No, there isn't.
Wade in particular says, no, Bev, you burned it all.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
hoisted on your own petard.
Yes. And then, so he says, no, Bev, you burned it all, right? And Dolly says,
Let's go find Lisa.
And then Wade says, Lisa, and looks at Bev, like shaking his head. He already knows he spent too much time with Bev Keen when he should have been trying to find Lisa. Like, that was sad.
It's like they had a blindfold lifted from their eyes and they're like, oh yeah, Lisa, let's go get her. You know, it's like they woke up from a spell. Ali and Hassan are reunited here.
Yeah. And then in the midst of this, right, Aaron is over on the lawn.
Yeah.
She's being, this whole time she's being fed upon by the vampire.
Mm-hmm.
And she takes out a knife and she slowly starts poking and slicing and stripping his wings, the fleshy bits, right? Mm-hmm. What did you think of that? What did you think of the prosthetics? What did you think of that as a plot point?
All right, prosthetics doesn't look a thing like skin. In terms of the...
looked a little too thin, like a sheet?
Yes, like the texture of it looks beautiful and like skin, but just the way it responds to being stabbed doesn't. And like, that's not their fault. It's just like, I have to imagine it would be extremely hard to replicate.
Yeah.
So just being familiar with skin, I was like, not a huge fan of the way it looked, but generally.
What did you think about her idea to do that?
Great. I love it. I love
Pretty
it.
Pretty cool. Yeah. I think it's so
smart and such a great use of the last little bit of lifeblood that she's got.
Yes. And very nice move by the production team, because if they hadn't laid the groundwork with Lisa shooting the vampire and it barely reacting because it was feeding.
Yeah, that's true.
I would have thought it felt cheap. I would have been like, as if. Why would
he just
lay there and let his wings be ripped up. Mm-hmm. He stands up and his wings are in tatters.
And he screams at her. Goes like, screams, ah!
And then does fly away, but not very well.
No, not well.
And then we get... so I have a note here. Fucking excruciatingly long.
It is excruciating.
Monologue.
And very nebulous.
That dying Aaron gives to imaginary Riley. I kept thinking I was done taking notes on it because I was like, I'm done. It kept going and I was like, okay, I gotta write that down. What did you think of that?
Oh, I really didn't like it. I wouldn't have minded a recall to that scene. Because do you know what
perfect.
I liked?
Yes, I agree.
I like her kind of turning her head and grinning like surprised. Oh, there's Riley. I liked that.
Sure.
Because I was like, oh, that's cool. And then I wish it could have been so short. Couldn't it have been like, heaven is love. Heaven is the ones we love. Why couldn't it have been something like that? And here's Riley. You know what I mean?
I would have also liked a nice flash of Riley. Would have been great.
Yep.
Her looking at space, at the stars as she was, and then maybe the frown turns to a smile. That would have been enough for me.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
And like, her turning, she sees Riley, and then the rest is the cosmos. That would have been, not like, and I am the lightning between the neurons. And then I am the lightning. And this and that. I was like, and then it's the cosmos. And again and again and again. Oh my God, it was long and it was felt kind of disjointed and didn't really seem very meaningful to me.
This is it. Like when she's beginning, she says, speaking for myself.
Oh, and that's so repetitive.
Myself.
Myself.
Myself. Self. That's the problem with the whole thing. That word self. That isn't. How did I forget that? I'm like, this is semantic bullshit that I don't have time for right now.
I know. This is the like climax of the whole show.
Exactly. My body stops a cell at a time. The brain keeps firing those neurons. I'm too busy to be afraid. There's no difference between me and the ground. Those atoms were forged in stars, just vibrating electrons. That's not really right. I mean, yeah, electrons and carbon, sure. There's a difference between you and the ground. You know what I mean? Like, that's just obfuscating the whole point.
Yeah, my body's mostly empty space anyway. I'm like, well, it's not.
I mean, come on. She says, oh, you know, memory's not even real and all this stuff. It's like, it's real. We've got reliable evidence to say that it's real. Even though it's circular reasoning because the brain realizes that a memory is real, it's like it's consistent enough that we know it's reliable. Mm-hmm. Memories are true. They're real. It just was really frustrating me. Fleeting little dreamlets printed on the tissue of my brain. I'm like, oh, like how many rounds of writing did this go through? Jeez. Yeah.
Chat GPT.
It was very, I'm 14 and this is deep to
me.
Yeah.
Oh, this is so deep.
Right.
It's not deep. It's not deep to me. It doesn't feel deep to me.
It says almost nothing.
Yeah.
It just is saying nothing. It's a nice sentiment in a way. We're going back to where we came from, but it is so arduous to listen to.
Yeah. And it like, I feel like it loses meaning when you make it so, and when you intellectualize it so much, you don't have to.
No, I know. It was just too much. The cosmos and its infinite dreams. I'm like, what the fuck does that mean? That sounds dumb.
It does sound dumb. Sounds like an album.
Yeah, and it would be like a real spaced out album. It'd be like maybe have no lyrics. Mm. And life is... So again, I wanted to stop writing what she was saying, but I felt compelled. I needed to. Life is a dream. It's a wish. Again and again into eternity. And I am all of it. I am all. I am that I am. Like,
biblical.
Please stop. It's gone on too long. We didn't need this monologue. I'm sorry.
No, I agree with you. I didn't like it. I liked the beginning of it.
Sure.
And but
nice to see Riley again.
Nice to see Riley again. And it was long. Like, I remember thinking, I'm like, when are we going to get to the rest of the deaths?
Can we get
everything?
Back to the vampire stuff, please? Yeah.
I remember thinking that. I'm like, it just felt like a lot of minutes.
Yeah, a lot of runtime.
Yeah.
He's like, let's pad that runtime.
Yeah.
Get another ad break in there, even though there are no ads. So Annie starts like a slow clap type hymn where everyone joins in after she starts. And I really liked it. Did you?
Yes, I loved it. We get a little nearer, my God, to thee.
Yes, and you've been singing it all day.
I have been. When you and I were on the phone earlier, I was humming it. I don't know if you noticed.
As I was looking for your microphone on my hands and knees.
As you were looking for my microphone. Yeah. I think it's beautiful, and I love that she's just singing it to Ed, you know.
Yeah.
And that's,
and she's fostering a sense of community even then.
Yep.
With these
everyone
people
else joins
who
in.
She's got gripes with, a lot of them.
Yeah,
you know,
probably.
So good for her. She remained faithful in a way that made sense to her, and I think that did make her a good person.
And I like the way you phrased that, made faithful in a way that made sense to her, because it's like, to her, her faith is her family, her community, her partnership with her husband. And so that's how she's spending
her... That's a good point.
She's spending her final moment in communion with God and with her husband, and I think that that's her life.
It wasn't dashed by what the priest did, what happened to the church, anything like that.
That's not what her faith is.
It's more in the spirit of it, right?
That's what's meaningful to me, is you want to spend your final moments with the people that you love and the things that you value. And so she's just, you know, singing right into her husband's face, like her loved one, you know?
And she's got a sweet voice.
She does.
Very nice.
Him, perhaps less so. Hers was very sweet.
He does try to harmonize with her at the end.
Does,
and I was like, ooh, okay.
Yeah.
But hey, who am I to say? I can't sing either. Yeah, he did the
Mariah. No, not me either.
He did the finger in the ear Mariah pitch check. Yeah, he did. I think I did see Ed do that. Another thing that just made me so satisfied in a narrative way. Not in a sexual way, in a narrative way. I see the way that you're looking at me askance.
Askance?
I've said askance, God, so many times. Okay. We see Ali and Hassan on the beach, and Hassan gets his wish because Ali prays with him, and they're practicing their faith together.
And do you know what else is beautiful about that? Is I believe that in the Muslim faith, when you pray in the direction east.
Oh, I think you're right about that.
You pray to the east. So they are.
That's so interesting the way
praying,
this plays out then.
They're praying to the rising sun. They are praying to the thing that's going to kill them, right?
One of them.
And isn't that kind of like a beautiful thing? There's no
that is
clear,
really cool.
No clearer way to show their acceptance
cool
of what's
connection.
Happening. Yeah.
Absolutely.
They're praying right to the east. That's how brave and accepting they are of what's to come.
And I have a note here too about this, because although there's all this nasty stuff going on, there aren't as many villains as it might seem in the
that's
show.
That's true. There's like one.
Yeah. And I said,
and
you know, this show is filled with people who did their best and died in a really nasty way, right? They were doing their best. They were trying to live a good life for the most part.
I think there's 1¾ villain.
So Paul gets the 3/4 nod?
Yeah.
Yeah. Bev was a villain the whole time. Mm-hmm. Paul, do we give him redemption for this episode? Maybe. It's hard because you're watching it play out. The stuff that he's done is not in the forefront of your mind in the same way because we're watching this episode.
Yeah. In other episodes, I've said how horrible and vile
he
is.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Jury's still out on Father Paul, I suppose. And you know what else is? Fuck you, Bev.
Yep.
You get to watch Ali and Hassan be faithful just down the beach from you while you sit there and try to bury yourself in sand.
Yeah, you get to watch them observe their faith and their love for each other.
Yeah.
Where you've got love for nobody and nobody ain't
and
got
nobody
no love
loves
for you.
You got no one and nobody and nothing.
Nobody loves you, Bev.
Fuck you, Bev. And she literally does. She gets so desperate, she thinks of trying to bury herself in the sand.
Mm-hmm.
And she starts bawling her eyes out.
Yeah,
it so
talks about someone
you.
Who's afraid of the afterlife, right? What's coming for you?
Clearly.
Nothing
maybe she
good.
Has a good sense about these things.
Maybe she's realized.
She ain't going to heaven.
She's going to H-E-L-L
double hockey sticks.
You're going to hell, Beverly.
Hassan falls dead in front of Ali. Super sad, but I thought it might honestly be for the best.
Because then he doesn't have to see his son burn up.
Burn alive.
Yeah.
And he doesn't outlive his son, you know, which is probably not what he would have wanted.
No.
Right? So ultimately, after Hassan went to the church, this is the best outcome that he could have had.
Mm-hmm.
His son became a vampire and he saw it. This is the best outcome he possibly could have had. Ali didn't hurt anybody.
No, he didn't.
And he also went with his father. He was instrumental, too, in killing all the vampires. So props to Ali.
Yeah, it's just so sad. He's a boy. He's a child.
Poor kid.
Yeah.
We cut to Paul and Millie on the bridge.
Mm-hmm. And they smooch.
Yeah, he looks at her and he says, "Forgive me."
Yeah, and like, she kisses him.
No,
she
Paul.
She didn't say she did.
She just kisses him, but it's like, fuck you. There's still too much of his misdeeds ringing in my ears to be like, oh, forgive me? It's like, no.
This show leans extremely hard on the charisma, like, of Hamish Linklater.
That's true. He sells us on a lot of different moods.
Yes. And, like, his charisma is like a palpable force.
So much Riz.
But I like could not have chosen a better performer. Period.
Totally.
Hands down.
He
full
even
stop.
Looked the part. He looked like a priest. I was like, yeah. Maybe it's because he was always dressed as one, but still, there was something to it.
Can you think of another role that is completely irreplaceable and could have been played by nobody else? Because this is honestly one. And
amazing. The Hops, for sure, in Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah, yeah.
The McKelster in Lord of the Rings.
Yes.
Come on, Gandalf.
Yep.
Also Frodo, but in a less important way.
I'm
to
sorry,
me.
But yeah, Frodo, like for sure.
Patrick Stewart in X-Men.
Yeah, yeah.
Classic. No one Charles else has the
gravitas quite like that. Reese Witherspoon in Legally Blonde.
Oh, but sure.
Completely perfect.
She was the right person of our generation to play that, no question.
But anyway, what I'm trying to say is that this show, not that it hinges on his performance,
no,
but aspects of it do. And he did amazingly well. So no one else could have possibly pulled off saying, forgive me, and getting a smooch out of it. And he also rips his collar off.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah.
But I was kind of smoldering a little bit that I'm like,
as were they.
How can we forgive you? Yeah, indeed.
And she didn't say she forgave him. So I guess it's the kind of thing
she
that
didn't.
Like,
it was nebulous.
You can love someone without forgiving them.
Yeah, for sure. What did you think, too, of the effects? So we see Bev. Bev is the only one we see burning alive, I believe.
The only one that we see
up close.
And for as long.
And her face is burning.
Her face
and
her hands.
She's still
yeah.
using her voice and stuff. What did you think of that effect?
I liked it. I think a little bit too long lingering on it. It probably wouldn't have continued to look good, but it did.
I really liked it. It was captivating. It was a very cool shot. And yeah, that would be the person that I would want to see. It couldn't have happened to a nicer guy.
Yeah,
right?
That's who I want to see burn. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So well done.
And isn't it kind of like she's so blind to like what it really means to be a good person, what it really means to be faithful, and she's literally trying to put her head in the sand.
Clearly.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And she's also, yeah, the burning. She was looking at the flames as basically a cleansing type of thing for the island, which is why she did it. And now they're all burning. All the people who did the bad thing of becoming a vampire, fostering the vampirism, are burned up, right? Along with the rest of the island. And we actually see that from the perspective of Lisa and Warren. And it's beautiful. It looks beautiful. The sun's coming through the smoke. There's fire everywhere. So everything's lit in a very interesting way. Earlier, they had seen the vampire
trying to fly
across the ocean. And he's like, well, the sun's going to come up and he's got 30 miles to go. He's not going to make it. So that's good.
Mm-hmm.
And Lisa and Warren are watching as ashes fall from the sky.
Mm-hmm.
And last scene. You want to recount it for us?
Yeah, so Ash is falling from the sky like snow. They look at each other, and with a hint of a smile on her face, Lisa says, I can't feel my legs.
Exactly. So did you take that as a triumph for her because it means it's left her body? Like that agent, the blood, all the rest.
It's over. Things are back the way they should be.
Do you think that happened because the vampire died or because she hadn't taken of the communion in so long?
Because it was like instant. And it hadn't been long because she
couldn't
goes every day.
Couldn't have been very long. No.
No, so I have to think
she
that
she probably took it that night. Or was she already in with the heroes by then?
Well, I don't know
then.
If they actually gave communion that night.
They gave poison.
They gave
right.
the poison out. So, but she would have had it at the very like latest yesterday.
Yeah.
So I guess I interpreted it to be that the whole thing is over because everyone's dead.
Yeah, I agree.
Which is why it would be instant.
It was like extinguished.
Yeah.
And that's the final shot. We get silent credits, just water lapping. Really cool way to end a series. And so what are the thoughts that stay with you when you're watching Midnight Mass, when you're coming back to it? You know, what are your reflections on it?
Really complex characters. Really big, meaty themes that you can spend a lot of time thinking about.
Definitely.
And just really emotionally resonant and meaningful, tear-jerking, emotionally nourishing content.
Mm-hmm.
And like, just, I love it. I think it's like wonderful and spooky and all those cool, fun, vibey horror things. And then underneath that, it's also just like really beautiful story with complex, relatable characters and a lot to think about with regards to addiction and substance use and faith, which are really big, huge topics that you can really spend a lot of time diving into. So just a really, really like nourishing content.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. I think that it's beautifully done. I think they deal with very weighty topics that you could get lost in the weeds with, but they do an expert job of handling them. And addiction is one of them, because you want to treat it with enough, with the gravitas that it deserves. And I think that that was very well done, where people with addictions or without can really identify with the themes that the characters bring up and that are part of this story. And they're very important to the narrative as well. That concept of addiction or fighting addiction or living with addiction. I agree with everything you said about the character development. When people think of horror and people who don't like horror, they might say, well, it's all about jump scares and nudity and gore and stuff. And that's not really what this show is about.
Not at all.
There's no cheapness to it. All of the payoffs are extremely well earned.
Yeah.
And a lot of the episodes, you're just spending time with these characters, and it isn't as horrific as you might imagine each episode, right? There are lots of horror elements that firmly plant it in this genre, but it's got as much emotion and as much drama as any other property that you might be heralded for having those themes in there, right? So, you know, I remember when you first got me to watch this that I was captivated and really loved so many of the episodes, and revisiting it, it's like it goes through so many different arcs, and I appreciate them all for different reasons, right? And I just love this show so much.
I love it more on rewatch than I did the first time.
Right.
Yeah. It's very rich.
Yeah, on rewatch, you see things differently, so I didn't know what the fuck was going on when I heard Holly Holy play, and I saw Ed dancing with Annie, and I saw people kind of just living more vibrantly. Now, on a rewatch, I know that's because they're de-aging and all the rest, right? So you just kind of have a different appreciation for some of those early on scenes as well. And great performances all around.
Yep.
Zach Guilford, Samantha Sloyan.
Hamish Linklater. Annabeth Gish. Kate Siegel.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Joe Cawley was a really meaningful character to me, too. I really lament the loss of Joe.
Joe Cawley, Robert Longstreet.
And Hassan
is Rahul Kohli.
I think Hassan was a beautiful character, always trying to do the right thing, very reliable, and therefore, you know, really, really a joy to watch.
Alex Esso, Mildred Gunning, Henry Thomas, Ed Flynn.
Oh, yeah. Ed was not my favorite character, but he did a great job bringing him to life, and it was part of the complexity, I think.
Yeah, so our parting shots here are that we friggin' love this show so much. Yeah,
bottom line.
Yeah, headline. We love this show.
Here's your headline. We love this show.
We fucking love this show. We would recommend it to anyone. We've even recommended it to our horror-hating mother, telling her that she might want to watch it.
That sounded so harsh, even though there were no mean words in it. Even to our horror-hating mother.
It just sounds like horror movies.
It's for no reason. It just sounded nasty.
Yeah, you made a face when I did it. I was like, what did I say?
Sounds too close to horror, maybe.
Our horror mother.
Even to her, we recommend it.
We love this show. We thank you so much for joining us.
Yes.
Making our way through all these episodes in as much detail as we did. Even though we spent so much time going into it, I think that it was all pretty valuable because, like we said, it's very rich content and we were really happy to go into it as deeply as we did. So thank you for coming along with us. We hope that the mental health topics that we brought up were interesting to you. You know, maybe we'll do another one of these series in the future. Please stay tuned for our next discussion of a movie. And yeah, we thank you so much for joining us.
Yes, thanks so much, everyone. We've really enjoyed this series so much. We hope you have too. Watch out for more series like this in the future, but we'll also have, as Jenna had just said, a movie episode coming, which we're really happy to bring to you. So thanks very much.
And rate, review, and subscribe.
Yes.
Thank you. Bye.
Take care, guys.
Does it ever get any different for people like us?
This isn't a community anymore, honey. It's a ghost.
You reached through time and you stole...
Suleiman.
We are living in a miraculous time. Right here, right now, on Crockett Island.
How does that make you feel?
Disgusted.
How does it make you feel?
Angry.
Nope. How does that make you feel?
Fucking angry.
Nope! God!